Hi dear listeners,
you're listening to Radio Revolt,
a show in which migrants and asylum seekers deal with a very complex topic of migration.
We are people with international history who come together to gain empowerment throughout doing community radio.
This is 92.6 Radio Helsinki.
Dear listeners, we are back in the studio again.
Welcome to Radio Revolt. Today, we are diving into the economic realities shaping daily life in Turkey, a country facing deep economic instability with painful consequences for millions. When we look at the figures, the impact on ordinary citizens becomes clear. Inflation is hovering around 35%, with food prices rising nearly 70% year over year. Although the average salary is around $950, persisting power, especially for essentials like food and shelter, has sharply declined. Let's take Istanbul as an example, a city rich in history, home to many civilizations and religions. Many of its residents are struggling just to get by. A family of four now needs at least $2,600 per month to meet basic needs. For the average worker, even covering rent has become a challenge. Many households now spend over 50% of their income just to keep a roof over their heads. Education, once seen as a reliable path for upward mobility, is no longer offering that hope for many lower and middle-income families. Poverty is pushing more children into work, and school dropout rates are rising. Inequality is growing. Nearly half of all household spending has increased. Walk through any major Turkish city and you will hear students, young professionals, retirees, all expressing frustration, anxiety, and hopelessness. People are working harder than ever, but still struggling to meet basic needs. Perhaps most alarming is the growing sense among young educated Turks that their life is worse than their parents, a trend that echoes globally. But in Turkey, it is paired with a clear awareness and rejection of a system that demands so much and yet gives so little in return. During my recent visit to Istanbul, I interviewed a few locals to hear how they are experiencing this crisis firsthand. In our first interview, you will hear from Sinan, a 29-year-old freelance tour guide who has worked in Istanbul for 6 years. He shares the daily challenges of a single person trying to survive in a big city. In another interview, Ali, a PhD student, also living in Istanbul, explained what he sees as the root causes of Turkey's economic problems and how many young Turks feel trapped and hopeless in their own country. So in the second part of our program, we shift our focus to beautiful Austria. You will hear from Stefania, who introduces us to the concept fraternities is our social groups that play a unique role in university and work environments. She also shares her difficult experiences with network of fraternities operating in Leoben. First of all, thank you very much indeed for accepting our interview offer. So I'm going to ask you some questions about how you feel yourself about Turkish economy's current situation. But can you please first introduce yourself, who you are and where you live?
Hello everybody, my name is Sinan. I'm a freelance tour guide that is living in Istanbul, but I'm originally from the city of Izmir. I've been living in Istanbul for the last 7-8 years. So I spend most of my adult life in Istanbul as of today.
What do you think about the current outlook of Turkish economy? There's a high level of inflation affecting the middle class people in Turkey. The decline of the purchasing power is a trend has been observed for almost two decades. So how do you see? How are you affected by this outlook of Turkish economy?
So I would like to think myself as a lower middle class, not quite low class, but not also in the middle class in the Turkish society, I would say. As a freelance tour guide, our business shifts depending on the season's waves, let's say. But aside from that, it's quite evident that things have been changing in the last few years with the pace of the inflation hurting the way we live. There is currently about 40% inflation in Turkey, and that has been rising throughout the years. Things I can afford last year, I can't really afford now, or at least they are too much. Again, the best example of this is 2 years ago, I was able to buy a secondhand old car with the money that I accrued. But right now, even buying that, we just moved to a new house and we just bought a new fridge. And even that shook our economics for a while. So things have been progressing worse for the middle class, I would say. And I can't even think about how a person that lives on the minimum wage in Turkey lives. Currently, according to the statistics, if I'm not wrong, 60 to 70% of Turks live on the minimum wage. They earn the minimum wage. So I'm one of the lucky few that doesn't, I would like to say. And aside from that, I also know a lot of my friends, high school friends that I studied together, who grew up in same conditions as me. We all grew up in low-income families, and we all had the dream of going to the college and making a better life for ourselves. And I know all of my friends right now are struggling because they weren't close to the minimum wage. Most of my friends turned out to be teachers while I ventured into the private sector. Those in the private sector feel it a bit less, I would like to say, because you get more benefits from your companies, and if you work for a good company or if you're a freelancer, you get more opportunities. Though I also have to say I work much, many more hours right now than I used to do.
So you mentioned about the items you were able to afford 2 years ago, and now you are struggling to afford getting those items. Some of those items were quite linked with your daily routines, daily life. So how do you feel yourself about not accessing to basic items in your life? Can you please a bit explain your feelings about lagging behind when it comes to accessing to basic needs?
So generally, especially things about like buying a house or buying a new car has been long gone from my mind. A few years ago, I was thinking about opening up my own company too, but the taxes and everything else that is involved in that is quite honestly impossible right now for me. But even without that, we saw a huge trend of shrinkflation or stagflation in Turkey. And the best example of that is tomatoes, which is, I would argue, the most important ingredient in the Turkish cuisine. Turkish cuisine uses tomatoes for everything. And I come from a bit of a rural place where we grew our own thing, so I remember the taste of tomatoes. But in Istanbul, it's been 7 years and I haven't eaten one single good tomato because the city, the price of vegetables and food have been rising very sharp at this point, and the quality has been dropping a lot. And again, I'm someone that can't afford expensive fruits and vegetables in organic stores or like from farmers market. And I'm saying expensive with like quotation marks. I'm willing to pay a bit more than the average person to have access to better food. So even with that basic food item is quite honestly impossible to reach for many people. And I have to eat, unripe or overripe fruits and vegetables because you can't really afford the in-season good one. The best example I can give is I haven't eaten a single cherry since the start of the summer because currently the kilo of a cherry is about 500 to 700 liras in Turkey, which for comparison, I can eat a whole meal for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I can really buy them.
So you are telling us that the access to the basic needs such as the vegetables, fruits is quite hardship for people, for especially for people whose economic class is located the middle class or lower middle class. So are you worried about your future? Are you dissatisfied with your current life?
Now I'm usually a hopeless optimistic. Generally in life, nothing can really get me down. I always see that there's a light on, like, at the end of the tunnel, that I believe in change. Most of my friends, most of the people close to me don't really believe that. They lost hope that Turkey will ever be better. Turkish economy is going to be better. Though I believe that things will get better.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the indicators show us that Turkey's economy is bad, mostly due to, you know, political reasons. It will be amiss to say that Turks don't understand economy or we don't have good economician. They could, like, just last year, a Turkish economist won the Nobel Prize. So because of that, I do have hope that things change in Turkey. Turkey is not your stereotypical autocratic country. Turks have been in democracy for the last 3 centuries now. It's not something easy to dismantle.
Do you think the economic problem has a political dimension? So do you think the current economic situation happened as a result of the political discourse in Turkey?
I do. A lot depends on the political discourse, in my opinion, that the Turkish economy will get back to normal, if not better, in the future years. Because it is obvious that Turkey is going to be a major player in the geography, in the region. And I'm not actually talking about Middle East, but more of the Caucasus, Balkans area, with Turkey gaining more ground in the EU,
mm-hmm.
Even if not as a full member, which that's one thing that I don't see happening in my lifetime, the Turkey joining the EU, but more of an observer state. Turkey is going to have a bigger say when dust settles. That's the best way I can describe.
So the last question that you had, my last question, you have already just answered a little bit. So it says the current economic problems such as the high inflation, the declining purchasing power. So these chronic problems, do you think is going to be solved in the near future?
Near future, no. Whenever, like, it is a bit hard to put a finger on this problem, like when it will be solved. Of course, with my biases and the way that I think about it, Turkey can't solve its economic problems without a proper election happening in Turkey. And as soon as the election happens, we are probably going to see some changes happening in the economy. And I'm not even talking about opposition winning. I'm talking about we are either going to get a more stronger regime that is going to have more clear say and easier time getting through what they are going to do. That might improve the economic situation. Of course, what I'm hoping for and what I think most likely is going to happen is there's going to be a change and we are going to turn to more orthodox Western ideals that will help with the economy, even if that is not going to fix it, because the general Turkish person currently just needs a breathing room. They just need stability. That's, for example, the classical tour guide lifestyle in the world, not just Turkey, is that you work in the summer, you rest in the winter with the money that you made in summer, which was possible for me 2-3 years ago, but not possible right now. So for a change, a lot of people are going to ask for that. A better quality of life, even just for as a smidge, will help the Turkish people breathing and the economy just getting back to what it is, in my opinion.
So it's really important that you underline the economic problems are not so much distant from the political discourse, but the elections, democracy, and the upcoming elections and previous elections have been so much connected to economic problems that we Turkish people are facing. Thank you very much indeed for accepting our interview, and thank you very much again for taking us into daily routines of a tour guide, the difficulties a tour guide facing in Istanbul. Thank you, Sinan.
Can you please introduce yourself, who you are?
Okay, my name is Ali and my surname is Yalçınkaya, and I recently graduated from Istanbul Medical University. I hold my master's degree in neuroscience, and I have a background in psychology, and yeah.
So you are currently pursuing a PhD career, right, in your country?
Actually, I want to pursue my career
in
PhD, in academia.
So I'm going to ask you some questions about the current situation of Turkish economy. How do you feel yourself? So can you please tell me a bit about how do you feel about the outlook of Turkish economy?
Actually, I feel disappointed because
after new financial minister, who's Mehmet Şimşek, people feel hope and some, you know, people feel that economy will get better and will be better in the future. But after inflation rates and after the increasing of inflation rates, people feel more disappointed. And for example, basic needs of prices are increasing, and even educated people cannot easily access to, you know, getting some and houses and basic needs and cars, because there is a special consumption tax in Turkey. It is increasing gradually in my country, and so people have to pay for some taxes when buy some their needs. So I think, yeah.
So do you think the economic situation is going to improve in near future, or how do you think that the future economic situation will look like?
I have no hope actually for economy future in my country, but I think Turkey needs some changes and in terms of government and some economic policies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think government doesn't obey some liberal policies.
Mm-hmm.
And because people feel pressure, as I said before, tax rates are increasing, and so I have no hope for.
But as far as I understand, the economic situation is quite linked with transition of power in Turkey. The current government has been in power for more than 20 years. So do you think the economic situation is quite linked with the transition of power from current government to another one? Is democracy a part of the economic problems?
Actually, I will say yes for this answer, because autocracy at Turkey has some autocracy policies, especially President Erdogan.
Mm-hmm.
I think Erdogan putting pressure on central bank and financial minister, and they have no independency, and I think this type of bad political issues is highly related to Erdogan's autocracy. Mm-hmm.
You are an educated person living in this country. So if you just need to make a comparison, the life you were expecting when you were studying in the university and the high school, and then the life you are currently have in your country, are you satisfied or dissatisfied with your life?
Short answer is I feel dissatisfied.
Mm-hmm.
And if I compare to, for example, 2021, and economy is not going good, and I think my life expectancy is actually going not good, and it's going worse, and I think I have no hope for future.
Do you have underlying talk about the economic problems, such as the declining purchasing power and rising inflation? Do you think this problem is going to be solved in the near future, or just these problems are going to stay for a longer time in Turkey? And this is my last question.
Okay. I think it will stay sane. Uh-huh. And
or let me ask another question. If you compare the current economic level in the 10, you know, maybe 10 years is too much, maybe the 5 years ago, maybe the after pandemic, what kind of the comparison would you have economy's effect on your life?
I think economy is going to be good, and people life expectancy is going worse because, as I said before, inflation rates are increasing, but in comparison to 5 years ago, inflation is going to like steady, and I think, and for example, in after the changes of some unorthodox policies and policies, and inflation rates seems to be steady for 2 years, but the increasing taxes and other special consumption taxes, people getting more poor.
Getting poorer.
Getting poor.
So just three words that summarize your feelings about the Turkish economy. If you just need to pick up the two or three words or adjectives, what would be those adjectives for you in summarizing Turkish economy?
Let me think about it. Maybe first word was a disappointment. And also anxiety and unhopefulness. Despair, yeah.
After this series of insightful interviews, I would like to shift your attention to closer to Austria. I will be speaking with Stefania, a student proactively dealing with repercussions driving fraternity groups in Leoben. In this interview, she is going to enlighten us with fraternity activities in Austria, but more specifically in Leoben.
Just for getting into the story, what is a fraternity? I just check a little bit the fraternity, but I think the most of the people might not be familiar with the concept of the fraternities. What do you refer to with the fraternity concept?
It's a student organization founded universities, especially in German-speaking countries. Fraternities often have a strong focus on like rituals, tradition, and lifelong brotherhood. So many of them engage in fencing. This is called Mensur, and they wear very specific uniforms with colors and special hat, and they uphold values like honor, loyalty, and often nationalism. So these are the fraternities.
This is kind of the web of branch groups in universities, a kind of the informal association including students, graduates, the young professionals, maybe older people, right? They are just supporting for the traditional concept like honor, loyalty, and the nationalism.
It's like that, yes. And there are like the alten Herren, like the old man. they support the organizations and the fraternities for their life, also as long as they live. And they often like get people when they're talking about the great network you get there, because when you're a fraternity, then you get better connections. Maybe they can get you into special jobs, and they can get you materials for studying, and they get you a lot of alcohol, and they get you to parties and fraternities. So there are some like conservative fraternities who are not fencing and who are not political.
So they are not so much unified, but it is fractured in terms of the format of the association. Some of them are just kind of the friendship group networks, maybe
as in university areas, but also I assume there are other formal association web, including the Alten Herren, the old men, yeah, and the young people.
Yeah, and when you get to them, then you have to get through a lot of rituals. So this is the same in, yeah, in Verbindungen and Burschenschaft. Not, and how can I call it? Every fraternity is a Verbindung, but not every Verbindung is a fraternity.
Okay.
So, So Verbindungen are often not political. They also wear their hats and they also have their colors, but they are not force political. And fraternities, especially the fraternity we are talking about now, Kruxia, is political. This is also on their web. And you can look at their website and you see what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And also, what's your experience? Where do you live? I guess the place you live, specifically some association or links with the fraternities. So what's your experience? What kind of experience you get from those networks?
Yeah, I was, when I moved to Leoben, I lived in Leoben for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So when I moved to Leoben, I was like a little bit confused. So why are there everywhere fraternities? Every university party is like hosted by a Verbindung or fraternity. And they are so connected with the structures of Montan Uni. Mm-hmm. So they, yes. And Montan Uni is for now a few years or for a longer time trying to get away from this image. They tell, yeah, we don't have anything to do with the far right, but they let them host the events. And now the event we're talking about, and we were talking about a few weeks ago, was the Bierauszug, mm-hmm, like drinking a lot. And this is an old Bergmännisch, so the people who were working in the mountain festival, marking the end of the academic year. And it's more than a party, it's a ceremonial process where students, the rector, and the major formally conclude the semester through a procession, through speeches, through Bergmännisch songs and collective celebration. And in recent years, Montan Universität Leoben has made it clear it seeks really to distinguish itself from extremist aligned student fraternities, particularly after some controversies in, like, I think 2018, where the fraternity Ledera was distributing flyers in front of the university, which had, I don't know if it was homophobic or racist, but it was in the newspaper. So the Montan Universität Leoben is saying, no, we are not like that. We don't want the fraternities to have that much power anymore. And despite this clear statement, this year's Bierauszug was organized by Burschenschaft Kruxia, mandatory fencing fraternity aligned with the Deutsche Burschenschaft and openly committing to the motto Ehre, Freiheit, Vaterland, so like honor, freedom and fatherland, which is really on their website. Their visible presence, including their flag raised in front of the university on this day, like contradicts with the university proclaimed distancing. So, yes.
Where does power come from? Just as far as I understand, even though university administration somehow this associate or just prevent from just engaging with those fraternities, but at the same time they have somehow supporting the fraternities through informal network. This is how I understand. So they have, what is the role of the university administration? So in the end, the university administration is actor who can eliminate the fraternities from the university parties and also the power to support those fraternities. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there was a new rector since last year or the year before, but the new rector was not in a fraternity, not in a Verbindung, and he came and he said, no, I don't want them to have this much power. I don't want them to have this image. And then, I don't know, like nothing happened or just like a little things. And yeah, I don't know, the fraternities are through tradition like so connected with Montan University, they are also like kind of USP. So a lot of people, I think so, who was like prepared maybe in high school, like come to Leoben and yeah, get to a fraternity. And this contradicts completely with the image of Montan Uni. They tried to like bring outside. They try to like be an international open university for like all genders, and like they want to be open. And this, it completely contradicts. I don't really know. I think the argumentation is always like the tradition, that it's too much tradition and they can put it away. So, and there is also a student organization, VSSDÖ, which is like, and they they tried to address this. They also printed flyers and they distributed the flyers criticizing this incident. And they demanded the university publicly distance itself from this extremist ideology. They said, yeah, okay, you can like maybe do it, but at least say that you are not like okay with these values. And the point, they point out the contradiction between academic neutrality and allowing Kruxia to take over a high profile university event. Because there was also like, yeah, their flag was his in front of university, which was not official, they told me. So this will not happen again. Because next year, the Lederer, the fraternity I was talking about, who like printed these racist or homophobic flyers, will host the Bierauszug. So like, and I also have to say something about Kruxia, who hosted this event this year. So yeah, they have Ehre, Freiheit, Vaterland on their website, but they also, in November last year, they invited Benedikt Kaiser, a very well-known figure in the new right and former member of neo-Nazi group, as a former member of neo-Nazi groups like Nationale Sozialisten and NS Boys. Yeah, since spring 2025, I think he's serving in an AfD office. Yeah, and he was like invited and he gave a speech or a workshop even. And they do not
this
hide
year,
this.
This year event, right?
November, okay. November 2024. And they don't hide this. So you can look on their Instagram page and they're very, very proud that Benedikt Kaiser came to them and talked about this
point. I understand that university somehow wants this fraternity, the web of connection, to continue. But the main problem is that the university has lack of willingness to differentiate different fraternities. Some fraternities are out of touch with the far right ideology. It's basically about drinking and partying. On the other hand, some fraternities are so much the far right aligning. They have far right ideological opinions, but from the university side, there is lack of the differentiating these fraternities. Some of them are innocent, maybe, but some of them are so much radical. This is kind of the essence of the problem. But how do you comment on it? Why the university administration is lying on the political or moving towards a political direction? Is it because of the city is very conservative, the people are very conservative, or the source of money is somehow deriving from not hate but the very far right political states or the groups, NGOs?
I don't know for sure, but I know that there are a lot of connections and a lot of people who are in fraternities or Verbindungen have a lot of impact deal. Yes. And the thing you said before about political, the university says, of course, so the Bierauszug, the event we were talking about, is labeled non-political. So they say, this is their argumentation, of course they can do this and host this because it's non-political. And I'm thinking, this is this like where we put the border, where we say, okay, if it's non-political, then we can like connect with the far right and let them host things. Are these values a thing you can like look over for a non-political event? I don't think so. I don't believe it. So, and traditions are never neutral when extremist symbols, rhetoric, or actors are involved. So yeah, I would like the university like to act this, yeah, really, really say we're not into this.
What can you tell us the political demography of the city you are studying, or the state, the Austria is a federal state. Has been divided into different states, and each state has its own certain regulations. And as far as I know, not the parliament, but it has a strong political structure in each federal state. So, is it a very conservative far right political parties are strong in this place, or the city you are studying?
Yeah, so we have a SPÖ major, but despite SPÖ continuing its lead, the FPÖ significantly increased the vote. It's like in all Austria and in Steiermark, it's so. I think also the SPÖ lost its absolute majority and now they have to make more agreements. But yeah, like theoretically it's red, but it's really, I think it's conservative. So, but I come from Carinthia, where I lived in the countryside, where everything is like conservative. So yes, and I think they have to make more agreements with the right now, which is like also good for fraternities, I guess. It's not so easy to get them away.
I just want to take your focus into the also students. So students coming from different parts of the Austria, maybe there are some international students. So on the one hand, I just see the students with the far right opinions just joining those fraternities, and I am sure there are many students, Austrian and international students, are so much open-minded like you. So what kind of the relations or just going on, is there any kind of the problems or the secret animosity going on in the among students?
Yes, I think it must be very strange for like an open-minded international student to come to Leoben and then like see them everywhere, and like when there is a university party, they come to you and try to get you. So they wait until you're drunk, or they get you drunk, and then they like invite you and yeah, you can come to us. The fraternities are really sexist. Yeah, you can like say it in a different way. This is one reason why I started my project in Leoben, because I saw these like really, really sexist structures. Women are not allowed to stand there with the flags with the men. Are they like always like, a category under? And I've also been to a Buddha. Buddha is the place where they meet, and there every fraternity, every Verbindung has their own Buddha. And this is also a place where university parties often end or sometimes start, but you have to go to their Buddha. And then one time I was there and there was a fraternity, and I was with a friend, with a male friend, and somehow he got me into that, because normally I would not have been allowed there because I'm a woman. And then I was there and they were all talking to me like, oh, you have to feel so honored right now. So this is so an honor for you that you can go there and we are talking to you. Yeah, it's like completely. And I've also heard a lot of not a specific fraternity or Verbindung, but a lot of stories I got from women from Montan Uni. It was like, it's not pleasant to go there. Like when you invited there, sometimes you get touched. Sometimes they like just tell sexist jokes and you don't feel welcome there as a woman. Yeah, no wonder. So, and I think as like you said, as an international student, it must be very irritating. Like you come there, you look on the website, like Montan Uni, yeah, we are so open-minded and we have like, you can, I don't know what it's called, I'm sorry. And a department for equality. We have also a department for equality, and we have it like, yes. And yeah. And we also have fraternities there who like rule over the university. And this is not going together. And I think this is one reason why Montan und Leoben is not really looking into the future. So how I see it, maybe they want, or part of them want to, but as long as the fraternities are there and they have so much impact and so much power, like Montan und Leoben can't be a really, really international university, because the fraternities also want to focus on the Austrian students. They like, they say this. Yeah. And
just what you are telling me just is extremely interesting, and somehow the awful, the discriminations to women, the other genders are just such an insane the ideology they are trying to impose on people. But maybe from the election has been done 1 year ago, the rise of the FPÖ, the far right party, has been somehow strengthening. This is my idea, that because of fraternity has always been a case in Austria, but maybe the rise of the far right party and far right agenda somehow strengthening these groups, these fraternities, and they are somehow the de facto group or de facto leader of the student association, so they can impose whatever they want to have on students. So I assume it's also a bit difficult situation for students.
Yeah, of course, like you say, and the FPÖ like is also holding up values like traditional position and be a strong man, and women have to know where their place is. And this is how they get the people. They get for fraternity. So the fraternities get the people because they tell them, yeah, when you come to us, then you learned how to fight, you learn how to defend yourself, you learn honor, you learn how to be a man. Those are like really, really old and really, really sad values. We're not holding up anymore, but they're continuing it. And the more political power the FPÖ gains, of course, the more culturally legitimized these ideologies become.
Yeah.
Yes. So, yes. So, I think the whole situation, the whole political situation in Austria is like, I'm really not fine with it. I think a lot of people, like we just saw on the things the Landesregierung did because of the Sozialkürzungen. So they reduced Förderungen in Sozialbereich, where you like make prevention against violence, prevention or also integration things. And
I do not want to think even about the state of migration on the ICE fraternities. They would probably be repeating the rhetoric of the FPÖ, just sending all the migrants back to the home country. So it is very difficult situation for students like you, and the migrants may be living in those area and the cities with sharing apartment or life with those people. So also, would you like to talk a little bit about your project? You just talked about that you are making a project. Maybe is it, I don't know, it is linked with these fraternities. Maybe you can a bit enlighten us with your project.
Yeah, so I founded it in 2020, and it was also because of the fraternities and because of the stories I heard about Lium. So I went out in Lium with two of my female friends, mm-hmm. and before we went into the club, they stopped and they looked at me and they said, okay, Steffi, now we breathe before we go in there and hope it's not too bad today. And I was like, this is like Carinthia. I'm sorry. I'm really, really from the countryside. And this is like how you go out there, always like being touched or sexist jokes or something. And it was really, really bad in Lium. Some female students also switched university because of this, and they told me that, so they wrote it to my account, Catcalls of Lium. And what I'm doing then, I go, so if they like hear something or they get catcalled or something like that, they write to me, and I go there and I chalk it down with like chalk. I just write it down on the street and I make an Instagram post, and this was enough to make like whole Lium fraternities hate me, which it was really fun, because my first event I hosted in Lium was, I was giving a speech, and I think we had 8 people there joining me and 15 police men and women who were also listening to this, because they were afraid that maybe we would be disturbed. And outside in the cafes there were fraternity members sitting, and I know them because I went to the clubs. I know them from the face, and they were just sitting outside and listening. And after the event, the whole chalk we put down disappeared. So maybe they just were summoned there to do this. Yeah, we also had in Lium the case that there was the rainbow flag. The university has the rainbow flag, and it was, I think, destroyed two times or three times it was destroyed or put down or like burned. And yeah, this is like, you feel as a queer person in Lium, you can't feel safe. Yeah, but I founded this project, and yeah, they did started to hate me, and I really approved that.
So you are basically taking out the story from the people experiencing kind of the racism or homophobia from those fraternities, and then you are taking a Instagram post that what this person got to write.
Yes, and I was talking about VSSTÖ before.
Uh-huh.
They were supporting me from the beginning. VSSTÖ is like, I think, the only left uh-huh. organization there, so everyone who is like thinking left at least a bit is like going to VSSTÖ, and they were like always supporting this. And VSSTÖ is doing great work. Montan only Lium, they're really, really fighting, and it can't be easy that the fraternities like go back, or they make the university a more open place for everyone. So I also really support them. Great to be there, and they are so important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. They wouldn't have a counterpart.
Would you like to add anything else in this interview? Just any point you want to underline or mention?
Yeah, I want the university to take action. the university. If you say you don't have anything to do with the fraternities, then please say something and don't let them host the events. You can't be like, oh my God, why is everybody thinking we're far right? And then do this. The image is self-made.
People should speak up more about the what problems caused by the fraternity groups in Leoben and maybe many other places in Austria. Just the fraternities has strong power.
So fraternities are like a giant live action role play for me, for one part. So with their like costumes and their rituals and the things, and they're taking this so seriously. And I know one story of a guy who wasn't allowed to go outside alone in his couleur because he's just a Fuchs. So just starting at Verbindung, and then you're not allowed to go outside because otherwise the other fraternities of Verbindungen can kidnap you and get you to their Bude and like hold you there until your fraternity or Verbindung comes and gets you out with beer. It's like a real, real, real big live action role play, and they don't see it that way, which is so for some parts it's even a little bit funny, but really serious what they are like, what their values are. So, but I think a lot of people don't get it why they are there. They just seek for connection. They just seek for maybe really brotherhood, because yeah, what is a man today? And it, the whole anti-feminist movement so big.
So that brings us to the end of this episode of Radio Revolt. Today we heard honest voices from Istanbul, people navigating daily struggles in an economy that seems to be leaving many behind. Sinan and Ali reminded us that behind the numbers are real lives full of challenges, frustration and resilience. We also took a step into the different reality with Stefanie's story and experiences in Leoben in Austria, learning how social structures like fraternities shape personal and professional experiences, sometimes in ways that are hard to talk about. Thank you for listening. We hope these conversations offered insights into what many people are going through right now, both in Turkey and beyond. If you found this episode meaningful, please share it with someone who might connect with these stories too. Until next time, please take care and stay curious. Bye-bye!
Hi dear listeners!
You're listening to Radio Revolt,
a show in which migrants and asylum seekers deal with a very complex topic of migration.
We are people with international history who come together to gain empowerment throughout doing community radio.
This is 92.6 Radio Helsinki.
Dear listeners, we are back in the studio again.